I was conscious of how I seem to al I always want to talk right after those videos, and I'm like, what if I don't have to be the first one to talk? What if Kate does? But then you didn't talk because you're probably so used to me
I'm so
being
used to
like,
you
and now our
filming.
segment is. So then our viewers at home are probably just like, did
Silence.
my video freeze? What happened? Come back to me.
It's true. I gotta be quick on the
All right.
uptake.
So
What's steadying your soul right now?
welcome to the Kate and Colby Show,
where we talk about things that matter,
practice the art of coming more alive,
and reflect on just how strange and wonderful life can be.
We're glad you're here. Hello, everybody.
There we are.
Good evenings.
Hi.
Welcome to the Kate
and
Colby
Colby show.
Joe, we practiced that like 17 times. Oh, I'm just kidding.
Sure.
We never once practiced that. Hello, Hans Melby. Good evening to you.
Hi, Hans. The whole time we were in the countdown, I was looking at my hair on the screen and thinking, what is wrong with me? Why don't I do my hair? And then the picture of us came on the little bumper video and my hair looked so good. And I was like, yep, confirmed.
Oh.
What is wrong with me? Why don't I do my hair? Ew, my hair is gross. Hi. How
Well,
are
here we
you?
are.
How's your hair? How's your hair doing this fine
Ooh,
evening?
that's a great question. So, this is our viewer check-in. Ready? And tonight we're gonna say,
How's your hair?
tell us how your hair is.
What do we
That is the viewer check-in.
want to know? How long
We
has it been since you've taken care of your hair?
it just yeah, what's your current, maybe your current state of hair, maybe your current feelings about your hair.
This is real. You weren't joking. You really want to know how their hair is?
Yes, we did the whole viewer check-in and everything. We had the
Nice.
music,
I still thought
and
you were joking the whole
no,
time.
we
This
want
is
I want
great.
people to
How's your
know
hair?
how's your hair,
I love it.
how is your hair's
Got a
ooh,
fresh fade
fresh
today.
fade. See,
What a coinky
we want to, that's the good love that we want to have at the Kate and Colby Show today. Fresh fade day. Did you get it just for the show tonight?
My word. You're a nerd. It's fine, I guess.
Karen says it's fine, I guess.
No, it's fine,
It's
I
fine,
guess.
I guess. Julie has some.
See, this is working out
That's
great.
not
I like
nothing.
it.
That's not nothing. I cut mine on Saturday, so I'm feeling pretty good as well, Rachel.
Colby does his own hair, so he has complete control over when and how
Yeah.
and also, isn't that amazing?
Corona didn't impact my hair's capacities.
Ben washed his for the show. Ben's coming on later and he
Oh,
washed his
wait, who's
hair.
coming on for the show?
You're mad that I said that just now, huh?
Yes.
Your mom
Coming
says
up.
gray and short.
Speaking of Ben washing
Whoa.
his hair,
Did we
coming
just
up,
go into a weird portal?
we just left the brick wall and we are now in the coming up portion of the show. So coming up, we have Ben Grace, and he's going to be with us in a little bit, but he's not there yet. But
My kids are asking if they can have ice cream. Yes,
oh.
but shut the door before cats come
Yes,
again.
it's probably too late. All right. If you watched last week, we had cats everywhere.
Cats were
Okay,
our
so
special
coming up
guest.
in a bit, we've got Ben Grace, who's going to share from his heart, share from his new album, As If Words Could Heal the Wounds. And we're excited about that. And if you were watching during the countdown, that pre-service music, what is this, church? I don't know.
You're just used to church, baby.
I've been doing church for 2 decades of my life.
Point is,
So
that was Ben.
that's coming up. So stay tuned for that. That's not going to be long from now. So that explains this comment. I washed mine especially for the show tonight.
I think they understood.
Okay.
Your brother just said you just entered the
The screensaver
screensaver
of a
of a Windows
2000 computer.
2000. That's
That
what I
is
was
pretty much
swimming
what happened right there. We could be doing this all
We're gonna
night here,
have fun
people.
playing with the green screen, you
All right.
guys. It's just gonna
Hans
be
was here for
cute.
the kitty kitty.
Yep.
Well, today is 8 days after the election. Last week we sat here with you and did just like a decompress, debrief,
Oh, yeah, that's
state of the
right.
soul.
It feels like it's been a
Feels
year
like it's
since
been a
then, so I
year.
forgot what happened. At that point, we were still feeling some nerves and dread, and we didn't know the results, right?
We didn't know the
I mean,
results.
know the
Yeah.
results.
And we still don't know the re- Yeah, we do.
Yes, we do.
It is past the point. Anyway, so that's exciting. We have a president elect with an asterisk. That's exciting. Today on my so I do a also on Wednesday at 2 p.m. I do a live show called Perspective Shift, where I read an article that I write. I write a weekly article, and then I come online and I share it. We've got more children coming down. Yes, children. Do you want to come say hi to the people?
I think they're checking for rainbow sherbet okay. in our fridge or freezer down here.
Down in our fun. Garage. Anyway, so this
now
morning...
the cats are in here, so we're going to have cats in our podcast.
Oh, the cats are back. If you can get them out, that'd be great, son. Thank you. All right. I was saying some things. What I was saying was today at my live show, I did a reading of an article I wrote where today I reflected on what I've been feeling lately in the last 7 days. Because I've noticed a lot of feelings come up. That's not new. I have a lot of feelings a lot, but noticing them is somewhat new. But then being able to actually articulate them is even more new. So as you know, sometimes writing is helpful for me. So I sort of wrote down and journaled out my feelings. And I've noticed that my main feelings are relief. I'm just really glad that Trump is not going to be the president anymore. Joy, just super stoked that we'll have a president who has compassion. Again, who cares for people other than just the rich and the powerful, that we have a woman vice president. But then I had some sadness about how many people still voted for Trump. I had anger about how many folks seem to willfully ignore all of the evidence that purports that this is not an election fraud. Like, just the things that they keep suggesting are evidence or proof of it. It infuriates me that they're choosing to live in a state of ignorance and well, who knows? That's weird, isn't it? No, it's not weird. There are legitimate reasons for that.
Yeah.
I shared some despair. I'm just feeling like not only are we living in a divided country, but it feels like we're increasingly living in just two separate worlds. To think about how the folks that voted for Trump, not only... it's not just that they think we're wrong on the left for thinking that Trump was a disaster. They actually think we're delusional. Like, we're not actually seeing what is obvious and true. And that's exactly how we feel about them, that they're not seeing what is obvious and true.
Realizing that that's what humanity has come to, is these two opposite views where each thinks the other is delusional, is enough to be in despair in itself. And then it just spirals from there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Feels like a shit show, society, humanity, doesn't it?
So those are some of the things I've been feeling.
Yep.
And... I wanted to ask you, do a check-in with you.
Oh, thanks.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling a lot of fear, which is it's not my go-to feeling, and I don't feel like I'm at least not conscious of fear a lot. So that's, not only is fear uncomfortable anyway, but when you're not used to it, experiencing a new feeling, so it's like this uncomfortable feeling on top of, which I know you resonate, mm-hmm. You know what I'm, mm-hmm. You understand that. But fear is not my go-to. I'm used to feeling more sure, confident feelings like anger. I'm comfortable there.
You are comfortable there.
Fear feels so vulnerable to me, and I don't like it at all. So, what did Logan just say? Hi, Brandon, by the way. All the feelings.
Yeah, good to see you, Brandon.
I feel like we hit the finish line and the starting line at the same time. Yeah, that's a really good way to put it.
Like, we can start fighting for change. We might finally listen, but we still got to fight.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
One analogy that I really liked... and I probably should have done a little more research on it because I don't know how much it works. But the analogy I thought of was like...
I didn't like that.
Oh, you didn't? Should I not share it then?
No, we go ahead. You get
when
to
When
has share.
That ever stopped me?
You get to share your analogy.
But no, I was thinking about how like... yes, we've removed Trump. Great. But Trumpism is here for... It seems it's here to outlast him for sure. And I'm... a little bit scared that 2024 will bring a candidate that is more competent at Trumpianism-ness. So the analogy was like a person who, you know, smokes multiple packs a day for many years and then develops lung cancer and then goes through intense radiation and blasts and the cancer gets sort of knocked out and set in remission. But then they don't like adjust their lifestyle afterwards and they just go back to smoking. And so in my mind, I'm like, yeah, the election was this great blast of radiation to get Trump out of the White House, but I don't know that many Americans are going to quit smoking And that is sort of just feels like we're going to be stuck with that for a while. Okay, I don't know.
That's scary.
That's where I'm at.
Let's get out of this doomsday, Trump fear.
Thanks for letting me share.
We dumped it. Dump in the comments if you need to as well. Some of y'all already have. But let's do our first segment.
Great. I was conscious of how I seem to I always want to talk right after those videos, and I'm like, what if I don't have to be the first one to talk? What if Kate does? But then you didn't talk because you're probably so used to me and now our segment is so then our viewers at home are probably just like,
silence.
Did my video freeze? What happened? Come back to me.
It's true. I gotta be quick on the update.
All right. So
what's steadying your soul right now? We want to know.
Yes.
And we'll share with you what's steadying our soul. We just feel like this is a really important thing to every week come to. What's keeping us going? And sometimes they're little silly things. Mine today is. Sometimes they're really big and deep, and sometimes they're sharing something with the world that the world needs to know. I don't know. They land the in different places. So mine this week of what's steadying my soul is, so I have to share something with you about myself first. I have a very, very, very sensitive nose, and I get really upset about scents, like really upset. Really upset. It hurts my feelings.
It's so true. Yes, go on.
When things don't smell good to me, it hurts my feelings. And you know, that's not just gross smells. So the smells that other humans are like, oh, it smells so good in here. It's horrifying to me. Cologne of any kind pretty much is not a thing for me. No. So I struggle to find scents that work for me. And so you found this for me almost a year ago, Christmas last year. And I loved it right away. And then my friend Jazz and I, Jazz, are you here? We were just talking about today that stupid thing where you know what helps you and you still don't do it, like that. You know the things that are good for you and that you like and that make you feel better. And you, even when you're so conscious of those things and they work for you, you still avoid them? Like, why? What is that? I hate that. It's biblical. I was going to say it's an Enneagram 4 thing, but maybe it's biblical. Maybe we all do it. I don't know. Do y'all do that? But anyway, so I had this a year ago, loved it for like 2 weeks, and then forgot about it, or didn't forget about it. I did the thing where I didn't do what's good for me. And then this week I was like, oh my God, that's right. That scent that makes me feel this scent. Okay, so if other scents hurt my feelings, this scent makes me feel like I'm on top of the world, like I can do anything, like everything's at peace. Ben was with you on the Bible verse. The good that I should always be to it.
Apostle Paul, Romans, I believe, is chapter 7.
Anyway, so this scent makes me feel Jazz like Superwoman. Here. So it is. Whoops. I'm trying to get it to. It's not going to happen. It's not going to focus on the camera, but it's Nature's Oil.
Get it closer.
Rosen. Cole says if I get it closer. Nope.
And then we've got to close our eyes because the camera tracks eyes.
That's not happening. Anyway, it's Nature's Oil Rose and Peony. And I've smelled things.
Oh, I always thought it was peony. I don't know these things. It's just in my head I chose to call it peony.
Peony.
Peony. Peony is a... It's really
funny.
Peony. It was Italian.
Also, fun fact, Kate, we have opposite noses. I can barely smell anything. Oh, how funny. Any other sensitive noses out there? Also, what's keeping y'all steady? So this scent is keeping me steady. And if I would just remember to put it in my diffuser every day, I would have a good day every day because it just makes me feel so good inside. What y'all doing to steady yourselves? Susan's writing, doing a deep dive on what drives her anxiety so she can choose the habits that she's hung on to, and choosing hope when doubt rises up. That's beautiful.
Good word.
Like peyote, yes.
Maybe that's why it was in my head. Mm-hmm. Rose and peyote. That'd be a good smell.
Time in your sauna with tea and challenging, inspiring book and some meditation and music. Awesome. Were there any ups for me?
How's the sauna for you? I'm curious about sauna life. I'm just curious about sauna life.
Oh.
I'm just wondering. I mean, clearly it's steadying her soul. Super sensitive nose from Julie.
I'm going to put it on the screen. I just like that there's other people with sensitive noses. What's keeping y'all steadied? Tuesday nights. I have a sibling happy hour, a 1 hour check-in with my siblings. Oh, that's beautiful, Hans.
That's fun, Hans.
That's so beautiful. I love that.
Yeah, so Karen is with me. So team smells. All the smells.
Is that what she meant by that?
Yes, team smells all the things, duh. I don't know. I just want somebody on my side. Ooh, do we need to do a help us segment?
Oh, sure.
Help us decide?
Why not? Let's do it.
Would you help us decide? Not the new frames. We already did the new frames. I should have worn my glasses to show what you guys helped me pick.
What did you pick, baby?
I picked... Why can't I change... Oh, because it's locked. Do you like smells?
What?
I don't know. How do we ask the question?
I think we already did. Are you sensitive to smells?
Are you sensitive to smells? Yeah. All right. Let's see. Are you sensitive to smells? Help us decide. Would you just drop a C if you are like Colby and you're not really sensitive to smells, or drop a K in the comment if you're more on the Kate side and you're sensitive to smells?
Per usual, Karen is both of us.
Karen, you don't get...
Buy and love all the scents and can't handle half of them.
That's fun. Yeah. That's been a journey for you and me.
Jazz's soul is being studied by aerobic activity. Forgot how much happier I get when my heart is pumping. I am the same. Yoga isn't enough. Got to get that heart pumping. And singing to yourself. I sang down to the river to pray really loud when I went down to the river today. And white Christmas lights to make this hotel room more exciting. Gorgeous.
Well done. Way to take care of yourself.
Oh, Bill is you. Bill Hates is you.
Bill gets... I have one for Colby.
But hates candles. Ooh, then why
Susan
do you hate candles?
Neither. Can't smell a lot. So makes you're neither sensitive nor sensitive. You just can't really smell a lot. Irma Jean is C. The Kate and Colby Show?
Matthew.
Okay, something's... Speaking of rigged elections, how is our own show
Matthew,
voting 17 times
heart.
For Kate?
I love
this
you.
This is fishy. Speaking of fishy things, this is fishy. I don't know about that. But anyway, so that's now... I got 3-1 because I picked up a Benjamin Grace as well.
Karen, I'll suffer through the migraine for the good perfume. Okay, but Bill, why do you hate candles then? I'm super curious why you hate candles if you're not sensitive to smell.
Can't smell a lot, but when Patty lights candles, I blow them out whenever she walks out of the room. All right, I think I'm... Oh, you have another one. Benaiah Smith, who I believe is an East Coaster, watching on the YouTubes.
Aww,
votes for you.
Hi,
so you
Benaiah.
Have two. So there's two for Kate, three for Colby. Currently,
what are you even doing? How did you turn... Is your nose sensitive into a
competition?
Such a three.
All things.
All right.
I can do
I'm
all things.
I'm excited for our next segment, so
also,
let's get it going.
I wanted to point out, you know how...
Oh, we didn't talk about what steadies your soul.
That's fine. We can come back to that. But you know how... thanks for letting me win that segment. You know how our skin tones are so very different?
Sure.
So I set the camera down here to look good on my skin. So I was like this. I'm like, oh, that's kind of a nice color. Bring the saturation up. And then you sat down and you're like, oh man, looks like Trump skin. I got to pull this back to where Kate doesn't look so orange. And now I look like pale. I should look, which is pale. So hopefully we look...
So you look like you?
Better. Yes, look like me. And hopefully you look less orange.
We need a recount. Great.
No. Oh, wait. Julie's a late vote. Sorry.
Not about Trump. Vote. Thank you, Julie.
It's a late vote.
But she,
count.
Yeah, she had already said.
No.
She had already said, and then you turned it into a weird competition. She didn't think she needed to vote again.
Vote didn't count. Sorry. That's fraud. Fraudulent vote. We're not counting those late votes. Right. But I also picked up another one on Jess.
What's steadying your soul?
Okay, what's steadying my soul? Kind of similar to you.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to sniff oil right now.
I've been thinking... okay, how do I want to answer this question?
I don't know.
The most true thing about me...
Julie mailed her vote.
Not the most true, but in the context of what I'm about ready to say, it's mostly true to say that I'm not very connected to my body. Like, I don't have a lot... I'm not in my body very well. I don't know it very well. I don't listen to it very well. I'm still uncomfortable in it. But lately, since I turned 38, so June 5th, so for the last 4 months or whatever it's been, I've decided, you know what, since I'm just home in my office, working from home, it's pretty easy to do push-ups and sit-ups, and I can just every hour or so just knock out 10, 15, 20, 30 push-ups. And so pretty much every day since my birthday, I've been trying to just feel my body more, do more push-ups, do more sit-ups, try to get a little bit more in shape, although I hesitate saying that because I'm not really doing it, like, I'm not getting a workout. I'm just doing push-ups and sit-ups. But I think that has been really good for me. It's been good for, like, to pay attention to my body more because I combine that with moisturizing the face, which, by the way, has not gone well for quarantine. I've had, like, weird breakout things. Like, I got this great guy right here that's just hanging out for all the viewers to see. I've had, like, this weird dermatitis that I had to get creams for. So my face has not liked quarantine, but I've just sort of accepted it and embraced it. And I'm like, well, I'm on camera multiple times a week, and I just don't always look like I wish I would look, but that's fine. So it's kind of this, my point is, what's steadying my soul is trying to be more connected to my body and okay with whatever it is, while also knowing that I do have the power to do some things about it as well, such as push-ups and sit-ups and hand lotions when they feel dry and chapstick, which I'm going to use right now. Because these are things I just didn't ever really think about or care about. I'm just like, oh, if my lips are dry, I'm just got dry lips, I guess. You can actually do things about it.
You can.
So
it's true.
Paying attention to my body is what's studying.
Point is, you're becoming embodied.
I hope so.
You're practicing embodiment.
I'm trying to.
I love it.
I'm on the journey.
I love it.
On the early journey.
All right. Plus, I love this. Okay. Next segment.
Okay. So is this the time that we are bringing our guest on?
I'm excited.
This is going to happen. And we have our guest. Hi, Ben.
Hello. Hello.
It's good to see you, brother. Thanks for being with us here tonight on the Kate and Colby Show as our live show guest. Thanks, bud.
First guest, really?
First guest.
Oh, live show, right?
On the live show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Way back in the day, we used to have a podcast, and we did a couple shows with guests. Sorry, we're looking at our cat who's currently just
you guys,
everywhere.
This is gonna stop.
How did the cat get down
the
here again?
The cat's in the garage. Has got to stop.
But speaking of cats, we got a sherbet. Cool cat on the other side of the camera, Ben Grace.
Hi, my sweet friend.
Thanks for having me.
How you doing?
I was jealous of your tea, so I asked Karen to make me some tea, and she brought me this.
Nice!
The unicorny mug.
Unimug.
There's a bit of a debate in our family. Some of our children think unicorns fly, and others do not. What's your
opinion?
Okay,
that's not true.
I think there are different unicorns. If what Fable has taught me, there's a whole family of unicorns.
Vindication.
Yeah.
That was what two of our kids tried to claim. We got in a big fight playing chameleon about it. Anyway, what really happened is that some of us got confused and thought we were talking about a Pegasus when really we were talking about a unicorn.
Yes. Yes. And I think there is a Pegasus unicorn like blend that happens and all other, you know, various things.
Yeah. Pegacorns.
I would have to defer to Pegacorns. There we go.
Yeah. Jess says that's a Pegasus. That's what Zeke argued as well. It's like that is no longer.
No, we know that was what happened. We got confused in the moment of stressful. The game Chameleon, anybody play that? It makes our family lose their minds.
It's fun and a bad idea.
We fight hard.
But back to
anyway,
Ben.
Ben, hi. A few months ago, I can't keep track of time right now. Can anybody? I don't know. Because quarantine. But a few months ago, I believe, your album dropped As If Words Could Heal the Wounds. And we weren't doing our podcast at that time. Otherwise, we would have had you on. So now we're doing a little bit of a delayed talk about the album. How has releasing it in quarantine been? How you doing? What was that like?
Yeah, it's been interesting. I think I was determined this time around to not squander the kind of the release, because I think often artists get really excited. You spend years and thousands of dollars putting something together, and then you put it out and then you don't know what to do next. Mm-hmm. And people are just like, that was awesome. When's the next one? And you're just like, oh my stars. That was a long and fraught journey. Mm. But I think at the same time, I had two things. I had the fact that most of the songs had sort of come out as singles before. I'd been releasing them over a period of 2 years. I was releasing them about once every 2 months. And I had a few songs kind of held back that I knew was going to be kind of part of the full album. So I was kind of wondering if I would be also a little tired of talking about them and tired of the songs. Yeah. But the day that I actually put them all in order and decided kind of how the whole thing would sound, and I sat back and listened to it, I was really emotional because it's been a huge journey the last 2 years to sort of get here. And this is my first full-length album. I've helped a lot of other people make mm-hmm. full-length albums, but this is my very first and my first under my name. So it felt really significant to me, and I released it on my birthday, my 41st birthday, which was the 4-year anniversary of the first time that I'd played a show under my name. So it definitely felt really significant. And then what I've been doing ever since is once a week, I've been putting out a podcast with all the stories behind the songs and pulling apart the little bits, you know, kind of so people can hear all the little details of the audio and bringing on some of my collaborators, my producers, and talking to them. And that has felt like a beautiful way to honor the stories of all the songs and take my time enjoying it myself. Like, even if no one else is listening to it, the joy of going back through those memories and really kind of getting, when did I write this? And when was the first time I kind of put this live? And, you know, why did we decide to go this way? Like, that stuff feels really important to honor this work mm-hmm. and kind of hold it for myself.
I love that.
Yeah.
I am obsessed with the idea of a whole podcast to talk about the story behind creating a song. Like, that feels like giving a song proper weight and how meaningful the stories and songs are. I love that.
Yeah, Song Explode is one of my favorite podcasts. It's an amazing, it's a really easy listen because it's usually between mm-hmm. 15 and 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. That was kind of the idea because I've listened to that podcast for years.
Yeah.
And so I thought part of it was just like, for me, it's not just, you know, these aren't 3.5 minute songs. Like, a lot of these are big stories that I've been kind of collecting over time or big things that I kind of feel like that I kind of want to have to say in, you know, societally. And so it's just like, this is a way, I think, to really bring all those stories up and not to let it just sit there and be a kind of a one and done and listen like, oh, cool, that was really fun, but to kind of really get into it.
Do you find that some songs are easier to talk about and or tell the story about than others? And if so, can you put your finger on maybe why that might be?
I think there are some songs where when you're touring them, you kind of get the story down live. And so some of those, you've just kind of got the cadence and you kind of understand it. But it is really interesting when you actually start digging back into these things, how many of those stories have actually, like our memory, they're a little bit unreliable. So I kind of come around, I'm like, actually, that didn't happen in that order. I didn't actually kind of think about it this way. So it was really kind of curious. And I don't have the best memory anyway, but it's incredible how kind of some of that, the story becomes a bit of a myth itself and changes as you kind of take it on the road. I think the other thing is just some of the more personal songs, how to kind of really tell that story well. And I was really grateful to have one of my friends, Chris Roberts, who's a friend and patron. He facilitated that podcast by basically we did 2 hours. We sat down and across video, he just talked to me and sort of interviewed me. And I chopped that up into kind of the core parts of the podcast. And I was so grateful because he's just so good, I think, at asking and so good at making me feel comfortable to dive deeply into those stories and to not censor them.
Yeah. And do you ever feel like so here, I was reading today, Comedy Sex God, the Pete Holmes book, and he describes how he hates going to museums because he just doesn't feel like he just walks around, he stands in front of a piece, like, tell in his mind, he's like, I think this is long enough to where people think I've looked at it sufficiently and I can move on to the next one. And meanwhile, he's just like humming theme songs in his head. And I can kind of relate to that because I don't always know what to do at museums either. And he was talking about how it's because he thinks he has to get art and he has to figure it out. And what does it mean and try to understand it. And so whenever I talk to artists like you, I'm always curious, do you find yourself, is it a challenge to talk about your art? Because if you could talk about it, then you'd probably just write it, but you're singing about it. You're putting it to 3.5 minutes of art, the thing that you're trying to say. So I'm just wondering if you ever run into that, like, I don't know how to explain to you what it is. Like, it just, it is this song. So what do you want from me? Like, what do you think it means? What does it mean to you? So I'm curious what that is like for you.
Yeah. And I know that, you know, talking about music is like dancing about architecture, that phrase. I think I'm a little different than some other artists. Oh, my laptop is saying low battery. That's Uh-oh. Really fun. Kieran's watching this. Can she grab my battery, please? My battery charger. I think it's a little different because a lot of my music comes out of a fairly specific story. And I think what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get this massive idea or this massive story down into 3.5 minutes. So I'm trying to basically reduce an essay or a novel into kind of less than 100 words. And I think that's kind of how a lot of my craft comes about. The stories are kind of, they're pretty, they're not esoteric. They're not like, you know, Smashing Pumpkins where you're like, the world is a vampire, set to drain. And she's like, I don't know what that means, you know. And obviously that might have some specific kind of metaphor, and a lot of songs are shrouded in that. That's not necessarily kind of my art form. I think my art form is very storytelling. It's kind of more in that folk tradition. It's more in the kind of, this is kind of what it is. It kind of is apparent on the surface. Once you hear the song, you can hear the story. I think it's more, you know, so for me, the pleasure of going back into the podcast is being able to then tell all the backstory. It's like, this is how I arrived at this song with 42 words. And here's kind of the big story and the journey of it. For those people who either can't intuit it or didn't have that experience that I've had, to kind of really dive into it and help them kind of get that.
I love it. And that is, did Karen come save the day?
Yes.
I love it. That's actually what I wanted to dive in with you about. So when you first announced your album and the title popped up on my little screen, I freaked out because I love that phrase, whatever, the title, so much. Like so much. It was like, you know, on Songland when Shane will say, oh, I'm so pissed I didn't think of that. And then he just, you know, he gets so mad. I was like that about it. Like, that's such a book. I want my book to be titled that, but now there's an album titled that. So I just think it's brilliant. I love it so much. So I want to talk about that. As if words could heal the wounds. I want to know, because for me, the title itself is just this gorgeous piece of art, and I know why it was so meaningful to me and continues to be so meaningful to me and why I get so jazzed about it. But what do you mean by it? Why did you choose it? What do you mean by it? Let's dig into that title, As If Words Could Heal the Wounds. It's such an interesting way of phrasing, for one, as if, like, just starting it that way. So what do you mean by it? What do you mean?
It does feel like it comes in the middle of a sentence, for sure. You know, mm-hmm. It feels like just a thought. And I think a lot of my songs and my art just come from like moments, and I'm one of these people who obsessively collects things in their notes app on the phone. Someone says something and I'm like, oh, you know, like years ago I wrote a song called If I'm Not Mistaken, and someone had said that. It's a common-ish phrase. And someone said it and I'm like, I've never heard a song with that in that. And so I just immediately put it into my notes app to collect that. And so I don't really know when this phrase kind of occurred to me, but I've had this phrase for years and years and years and years. I knew when I started the album that was what I wanted to be called. And I think part of it is I've always been obsessed with words. Like, they've just kind of been the thing that has kind of captured my imagination, moved me, kind of made me feel things, kind of changed my mind, changed my heart. Like, words are beautiful things. Like, years ago, I heard a Rob Bell sermon on how we should be careful with our words as Christians. And it was sort of, in some ways, pushing back on kind of that, let your yay be yay and nay be nay, like, in this very black and white that we should not swear and we should watch our language. He was saying it's more than just watching a language, because it kind of carries a weight to it. And he talked about this Jewish tradition where they would sort of double down on their kind of their promises. Like, if you say, I swear on my grandfather's grave, like, it's something, some phrase you would say. And we know that if someone says that, there's a little bit of like, are you trying to pull my leg? And there's this Jewish thing of just like,
you see that in Survivor, which I know that we've turned you and Karen onto. Like, people, it's not just enough to say, I swear I won't do it. It's like, no, I swear on. And then they add these layers, which, as you're saying,
I swear
feels like, I feel like you're counterproductive here, and your layers upon that.
Exactly. And the more you get down that, the more maybe we can't really trust what you're saying, because it kind of feels like you're selling me something. You're trying to convince me of this, of this kind of thing. So I think for me, I've always, you know, I take people at their word a lot. I think that kind of how we say things kind of matters. And I think that, you know, obviously we're coming out of Trump's America, and I think a lot of the words that have been said have moved huge things, you know, like that, you know, it's not enough to just hint at violence. People say, well, he's just saying it. I'm just like, yeah, but I think a lot of people felt permission. You know, I think it really did do something. So words have been that way for me. I've kind of felt them, you know, very, very deeply. In fact, I think in that same sermon, or maybe it wasn't, it was a different one potentially, he was talking about just how beautiful language is. And he kind of shared this little excerpt from a book from this writer I'd never heard of before called Robert Farrakhan, who I know that you know, Colby, because you're reading that parallel book right now. And he basically said, you know, God is not your funny. God is not your mother-in-law coming to see whether her wedding china is chipped. He's your funny old uncle with a salami under one arm and a bottle of wine under the other one, and it'd be shame to miss out on all the fun. And literally, just that sentence like rewired something in my brain about God. Like it took an image, and it took something that I've kind of had my whole life, which was an angry God, a judgmental God, a God that was you know, kind of out to kind of get me, and gave me a different picture and a different image to hold on to. And it was just one of those things like, I need to read that author like this very second. Something about those words, the way they flowed, just hit me and kind of really affected me. So I think that's a truth for me. But what I've also realized is that sometimes we kind of have to, well, for me anyway, I'll speak just for me, sometimes I feel like I have to word my way into action. Like I have to kind of get the idea. I have to bring the theology. I kind of get the ideas kind of right, get kind of the thinking, and then it works its way down to my body and out into my practice. And that's kind of been how I've been. And I kind of wonder whether the same thing is true of the prophets, right? That we kind of have to tell a story. We have to kind of imagine the world into a bettering. We have to kind of talk our way into a greater future. Part of our, you know, existence as artists and as prophets is to kind of say, imagine there's no heaven, you know, imagine there's no this. And that part of those words, kind of the preposterous nature that a word could actually change a huge fundamental like shift in society, or could, on my album, you know, the fact that there's songs that kind of talk about Black Lives Matter or gun control, the fact that those words might actually have an impact on some of these huge wounds feels preposterous to me. Feels like kind of, I don't know, it's like it's weird. Yeah. So,
is there one song that you've heard from people, or your AirPods are down 20%? Which
everything is just falling.
Before we get too far, will you tap on your microphone for me? Okay. I can't quite tell if I'm getting the sound from your AirPods or from that microphone, but all right, it is that microphone.
Oh, that's weird.
So I was going to ask if there's any particular song in your album that has stood out with regards to people saying, sort of reflecting back to you, that those words and that song have had this sort of salve to my wounds.
That Right Lullaby, I think, is one that people have just been really reflecting back to me a lot. And we released that song earlier. Like, I wasn't going to put that song out.
You cut out a little bit. You said Write the Fear a Lullaby, right?
Yeah. Yep. I should double check that I haven't just changed, now that I've changed into these headphones. Have I changed everything for you guys?
No.
Probably.
You're good.
No.
Okay.
So that's the one that people have given you the most feedback is...
Yeah, I wasn't going to release it early. I was going to wait until the whole album came out. But when I kind of sent it around to my inner circle people in April or so this year, a bunch of them said, this song kind of needs to be out now, you know, because of all the anxiety around COVID and just kind of the world was in this spinny kind of place. And I think in the election year, there was so much going on. There was so much fear, I think, kind of laden, you know, on top of all of us. And so a bunch of my friends were like, hey, you should put that song out now. Like, this song kind of feels like a moment. So we did put that out, and a lot of people kind of wrote to me about that. And what's amazing is the kind of the range of people and kind of how they read it was really interesting. one of my friends who I shared this, I think, on my social media, but she was kind of wanted to stay anonymous, wrote to me and said, this is the exact conversation I've been having with my partner. And she was kind of in a very similar state to me, where she'd been through a recent divorce and we kind of shared kind of all of that together back and forwards, and was with it, you know, newly partnered, and said, this is the conversation we've been having over and over and over again as this new relationship has been forming. And he is someone who's put it into a 3.5 minute song. And, you know, ironically, that's the story of the song. It was, you know, it was Karen here in San Diego and me in Colorado, and we're getting into this new relationship and it's long distance. And we're both kind of, you know, coming out of partnerships kind of falling apart and trying to get, trying to move forward into this new thing, but still carrying a lot of that anxiety and that kind of, just all of the fear that comes to that. So that was how the song was written. So it's absolutely incredible that this other friend of mine was like, this speaks to exactly to that. I'm like, how did you know?
Oh, yeah. I love that.
I love it so much. I love it so much. So the title then, As If Words Could Heal the Wounds, it's, to me, I took it as very both Andy of like, as if they could, and as if they could. You know, like it feels like expressing both those things of words can't actually fix this and words could fix this. It feels very paradoxical to me. I don't know if you meant it that way at all, but I feel like that is a paradox in our lives, that you can't, you know, we talk all the time about you can't just talk a big talk, right? We have those phrases of you have to walk the walk. That's what we mean when we say that, like words aren't enough. Or we talk about like, performative activism, even. I think of that, like words aren't, you can't just put the words on your social media screen and call it good. So I think of that, of like words aren't gonna cut it. And then also, like you said, prophecy, like we say the words to make ourselves whole. And I loved the way that you speak to like the deconstruction, like the old stories, and how the new words can shift those stories. You mentioned it with like the Rob Bell thing, but kind of taking those old churchy Christian wounds. And that's where I see those wounds in particular, the church wounds. That's where the words are so important, or any sort of oppressive thing, really. Your songs do that for me. They go back over those old wounds. And that's where it's like the yes part of it, of, yeah, words are so often not enough, and then words can completely flip your life upside down and heal you and take the thing that was wounding and make it whole. So,
yep.
Thanks for doing that for people. Thanks for saying
so good.
Thanks for saying yes to God, Source, Love, Universe, that has beckoned you over and over again to create, to make, to do. And that invitation won't do anything unless a person says yes. And you have said yes so many times in your life. And that, it's an inspiration to me. And I think, I know so many people have also been inspired by the fact that you say yes to that call, and you make and you create. And more than just that, you don't just say yes to the call, but you say yes to the call knowing that it's going to require you to reach into the bottom parts of you and dig out all the things that you have been through, and your own wounds. You don't just get to say yes, but no to that. Your sort of yes involves saying a yes to yourself as well, and your own past, and your own wounds. That sort of yes is what... That's everything. And so I just want to say thank you. Thank you for saying yes to your own self, your own story, and yes to God's invitation for you to make out of that. We're all better off for it, brother.
Yeah, you model that for us, and you make me want to keep using my own life wounds to help bring healing to other people. That's what you do. When you were talking about that, I was like, yes, he gets in his own wounding, and then he's like, here's my blood poured out for you.
Maybe that's what that means.
It hasn't always been that way. I know. I love it too. That's wild. It hasn't always been that way. It's taken quite a long time to get here, you know, I feel like, you know, so many times, you know, on my bad days, I feel like, man, why am I such a slow learner? Why did it take me, you know, to almost 40 to find this voice and to kind of, and start telling, I think, the truth, you know? Because I think often it has been just, there were melodies that were just kind of, you know, stories, and they weren't always mine. But this, definitely this first album feels like a big statement of like, now this is who I am. This is kind of what I have to say. This is how I see the world. This is what I hope for, you know, for the kind of the greater good. And it took a while to get there, you know, and I don't think there's anything wrong also with kind of people writing tunes that are just joyful and celebratory and things that kind of get me on the
like
dance floor. I think whatever
sugar.
It is that
we need the watermelon sugars.
We do. I'm not going to write them.
That's right.
It's not going to be me. Yeah, that's my other favorite thing about you, though, is that it took me a while and that you just like own that. And like, please, let's normalize having our first solo album be when we're 40, turning mm-hmm. 41.
Yeah.
Good. I want to write my first book when I'm in my 40s. And, you know, like,
we're just getting started now. I think for me, the myth in music is like you're 27 club or the 31 club. You need to put out a great work and then die young. And you know, that's a big burden to bear. And then once you get beyond that, you're like, wow, I have no chart for what happens next. But in the last few years, we've had Leonard Cohen, David Bowie. I feel like I'm missing someone else. But these people who have lived a great long life and then put out their albums as they're staring into the jaws of death that are just magnificent, like just soul-chilling kind of work where you're just like, oh, there is wisdom right there. And you saw it right before the end. You know, obviously David Bowie putting out a song called Lazarus as he's dying is like, wow. That's
that
astonishing.
I didn't know that happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it.
Well, do you have a song for us?
Oh, hold on. Oh. I'm not done talking to him. Because that's how we're closing, right? I'm not ready to close.
Oh, that's right. I was thinking song, and then we come back and do our question, but you're right. We wanted to close with this.
We're
going to
close with
the
song, and I have more to say. I have more to talk about. Cool. I want to talk more about the healing, because you went ahead and put the word heal on your album, and that word, I don't think we have a great understanding in our culture of that word, and any understanding we do have of that word. But we don't use it much, except for in like, I think of it mostly in like religious spaces. We don't use it much as a culture. And then when we do use it, I don't know that we're using it correctly or in a way that I feel like I would sign off on. Do you have thoughts about that word? Like, as you put it on your album, did you consciously think through it at all of what it means to you to heal? Or has anything come up for you since then?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, my journey is really just the last few years I've kind of found my way into therapy. And that has been the single most healing thing of my life. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of other things that have helped me heal. But I think that's the main thing. I think finding, someone who can journey with you and someone who can listen to you and kind of help you find those, you know, way back to some of the stories that you're really trying to kind of uncover and rewrite, and finding someone who can help you do that work and kind of mirror yourself back to yourself and kind of help you find the kind of the threads has been the most incredible thing for me, for sure. And I think that's helped me, I think, have this appreciation for, I think we need to understand our history as people, not just personally, but societally. I think if we understand
like
kind
of
where
healing is understanding.
Yes.
History.
I don't think we can move forward with, say, racism in this country without understanding our racist past. You know, it's, and I think a lot of people kind of want to be like, well, I didn't do that. That, you know, like my granddad was racist. I'm not that person. I'm like, yeah, but you know, until we figure out how the whole system was built around it and how we have all, you know, we have privilege because of it and how we've all kind of benefited from it, then we can't actually do the work of then going back and undoing those things. So I think that's what therapy has showed me, is I need to understand my history and how I got to the stories I got to, and then how to then have a chance to kind of rewrite those and find healing.
I just had because I just had a big light bulb moment of that parallel you made of healing in our personal journeys is looking back over our history, and then culturally it's same. And I don't think I thought about that before. I've thought about the fact that we're not going to heal racism in our country until we look backwards and have a reckoning with our past. And obviously I know that I go to therapy and talk about my past, but I'm just realizing that as you said that, I just had this like, oh my God, aha moment, as Oprah would call it, of, oh, right. Like, I think we know that there's a path to healing. Like, there's a formula. There's a formula, and it involves looking backward, whether it's your personal life journey or your, I mean, this is gonna seeming so duh to everybody, I'm sure, but I just had a real moment of like, oh yeah, in our personal or our cultural collective, like either way, there seems to be a formula for healing. You gotta look backwards before you can look forwards.
I love that.
I think Audrey Assad actually was one of the first people that kind of said something around that, that really kind of made me go, oh, because she went from Protestantism to Catholicism and sort of did that conversion a few years ago and has been very open about that. And I had the real pleasure of interviewing her on a podcast I used to be a producer on. And she talked about how it was that journey of realizing that in her tradition, of evangelicism, it was really young, you know, and she'd never really done any reading beyond kind of the 20th century when it came down to spirituality. And when she led back into kind of more the roots of the tradition, she found Catholicism, found a different faith, found a broader, wider, deeper kind of thing. And so that idea that, you know, which is kind of like an oxymoron, you know, or a paradox to say, to go forward, we need to kind of look backward. We need to learn from kind of where we've come, where we've trodden. Is informs where we go is really intriguing to me, because I think sometimes we can, otherwise we walk around in the wilderness, like in a circle, right? And we never kind of go to the promised land. We never actually kind of move forward. We're just repeating the same story. And I've had that in my life and in therapy constantly. Yes. You know, my therapist is like, that sounds like this thing that you said to me 3 months ago. I'm just like,
doing it again, same story. Yes. Yes.
Same.
Yep. So healing involves looking backward. What does healing look like for you? Does it look like, I'm asking leading questions. Does it look like, oh, I don't experience pain anymore. Oh, I feel happy all the time. I know you're not going to say yes to that. So then what is it then? If healing isn't just magically putting a salve on there, on those wounds, and then they're all closed up and you never look at them again. If it's not that, which is oftentimes, I think, when I was saying that, we don't do well with that word. I think we've got the wrong definition. We think it's that. So if it's not that, then what does healing look like and feel like, and how do you experience it in your life? You said therapy has brought you to it, but what has that done for you? What does it look like?
I think it looks like a little less anxiety for sure. And I think that what I mean by that is, I think so much of me, particularly as a person, I've always been so, I have to go forward at all costs. You know, the future is kind of where I want to be. I don't want to look too far in the past. I don't want to kind of dwell in the present. I just want to keep moving at all costs, keep building, keep, you know, kind of keep growing. And I think the process of therapy and for healing has been slowing down to find the present, because that's the only place you can really be, you know, and just being more content with the place I'm at, you know, in that kind of moment. And I think a lot of for me, a lot of the kind of the hurt, a lot of the pain comes from just not wanting to be where I am, you know, not being satisfied with the current state and not being satisfied with just where I am in kind of, you know, in therapy. Like, you know, when my therapist pointed out literally on Monday, which is, you know, 2 days ago, that I was kind of back around this kind of same old theme, my immediate feeling was just this frustration, you know, with myself. But kind of realizing that the actual realization that you kind of there and doing these things, kind of the awareness that you kind of have yourself, is part of the healing, is kind of a slow march towards progress. And to be able to catch yourself and go, oh, yeah, there it is.
Here I am again.
Here I am again, you know, is part of that trick, you know. So I think that's, you know, it is coming face to face over and over and over again with yourself and being okay with it, because I think I was never okay with kind of looking in the mirror. I was, you know, I had a lot of self-hatred and still do. So I think a lot of that is learning to love slowly and surely and kind of learn to love those parts of myself that don't seem lovable, you know?
Yep. I love that. It sounds like a gorgeous description of healing, looking backward, facing the past, but then learning to be in the present and being okay with who you are, even when who you are is that person that gets stuck in the past. That's what I heard you saying. I love that. So good. All right. So here at the Kate and Colby Show, We practice holistic care for the soul, and we're really interested in bringing spirituality back to just a normal conversation. It doesn't belong to the evangelical Christian church. Preach. We all get to talk about spirituality, right? Every one of yep. us. And so we're wondering, Ben, we want to ask every single guest this question at the end of our show. What does the word soul mean to you?
I'm really glad you actually gave me the heads up on this, because the minute you asked it, you told this question before we started and pressed recording, I was like, oh my gosh, like I need to say something really profound.
Sweet.
And I was kind of wrestling for a second. I had this little panic, and then I was just like, okay, no, I think I've got something around this. And I think it's very similar to what Colby kind of just said moments ago, is that I have spent my entire life ignoring my body, you know? Mm. I'm trying to remember the name of the guy who gave a TED talk, you know, years ago about education, Sir Ken Robinson. I think he actually just passed not that long ago. Amazing TED talk on about education and kind of what it is and what it isn't. But he said in the West, we basically progressively start education from the waist up and then from the neck up and then slightly to one side. You know, so he's talking about kind of...
Oh, my God.
Which are huge words and huge kind of fiery kind of things to say. And so he's basically saying all the education is just in this kind of right brain, is in this very, you know, narrow way. And we've even kind of using, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic, you know, we've even narrowed down what is kind of the best way to learn and what is the goal of education. And when he was talking about that, he was talking about how, you know, and then the goal of education is to basically create professors, you know, that's the ultimate goal. Like the same way, yes. I think, in a lot of churches, that the goal of the way you ascend
is to regurgitate. What they're learning, is that what you mean by that?
Basically, yeah. You know, memorize, you get the best facts. Marks when you kind of, rote learning. The same way I think in church, you know, the highest role you can do is become the pastor. Yeah.
That was becoming, making disciples, right? It's just like,
that's right.
To regurgitate this sentence.
Like the whole point of Sunday was to learn the Bible, just to know it. Why?
Yep.
Yeah.
Literally, in a lot of church planting kind of leadership stuff, you say reproduce yourself, and they say that. So you're actually like trying to put yourself out of a job. And I'm just like, I don't think that's right. I think our goal should be that everybody finds the best version of themselves, the deepest version of themselves, and leads out of that place. You know. So anyway, all of that to say, I think he talked about how professors basically walk around their body just trying to get their brain from meeting to meeting. Like their body is just a vessel to move their intellect around. And I think that was my experience too. And I think when you asked that question, it made me realize that there's been even more splits than that in myself, because there's the body and the mind, the intellect. But then the soul part of it, right, is somewhere else, you know. And we have that idea of mind, body, spirit, that there are these three things that we kind of interact with. And so for me, soul, you know, the part of me when I feel most happy and most myself and in the deepest, deepest knowing of myself is when I am creating, when I'm, you know, writing, when I'm doing music, when I'm performing, when I really kind of slip into that lane of kind of knowing and this kind of idea that I'm home, you know. And that to me is the soul. That is a place where I'm at rest. Where the striving and the worrying and all of the getting the thoughts in the right order and all of that, it doesn't really matter, you know. Mm-hmm. And I notice in that moment, that's when I actually am bodily the most calm, you know, when kind of at peace there, and when my mind slows down, where there's not a million things kind of going, I'm just in the moment. Those moments that I think the thin spaces that the Celts talk about, where you kind of feel like you break through and touch something other, something transcendent, something beautiful. So that to me is kind of the soul. That's kind of the work of coming back home.
I love it. You passed.
The soul is the place where you're at rest with yourself. That's gorgeous. How do you care for it then? I mean, you kind of just said...
Well, you know, this is where I think Enneagram work has been extraordinary for me, because every Enneagram type has their way to find rest. And I think, honestly, pandemic has been extraordinary for me. I would have said before the pandemic, I was an extrovert. I've said that my entire life. I love people. I want to spend people. I want to be around people my entire time. And then pandemic hits and we can't be around people. And I panicked, I think, for the first few months. And then after a couple of months, I'm like... Oh, now I get to do this work. I get to be alone. And it's amazing to me just the feeling of that. I think I basically covered up my own insecurity and my own self-hatred by being constantly, you know, constantly looking for affirmation out there, you know, just running around performing, running around doing whatever I could, running around trying to be as shiny and as bright and, you know, kind of likable as I could, to not see and to not kind of slow down and see kind of my own darkness there. And I think it's been extraordinarily healing for me in the last, you know, however long I've stopped counting because it's kind of depressing. But it's kind of funny because then I'm feeling anxious about when we come out of quarantine about how to carry a no and how to feel that shape again. Yeah. So that's been, you know, for me, I think solitude is one of the things. I think it's in the head triad, is it right? It's at the heart triad, that solitude to get away, to be by yourself.
Yes.
And as you know, we have this pod and we have, you know, four people and one kid and two cats and a dog in this one house. And sometimes I'm just like, that's too many people now.
The extrovert is now saying that, yeah, four people is too many. I love it. Yeah. That's beautiful. I think pandemic has taught us all so much about ourselves.
Yeah, some good soul
stripped
lessons.
Away the things we thought we knew and find a deeper truth for sure.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Thanks for sharing.
Thanks, friend.
Ben Grace. We love at you Ben so Grace much. Music. Yeah.
Jazz wasn't kidding. You'll find yourself replaying this album over and over and over and over again. It's so healing. It truly is. Not just saying that because it's in the title. The words do heal the wounds for sure. So check that out. And then, Ben, you're going to share a song with us to close out the night, yeah?
Oh, am I? Oh, boy. I didn't get set up there. I can drag my piano across there and we can do it. So maybe right. You guys can run.
Yes, you go. You go do that. I'll awesome. Switch to this. So Ben can go back to his piano. Oh, wait, I had something. I could have just done this. Have a transition already ready to use, and I didn't use it. Missed opportunity.
Everybody loves his transitions.
I do love my transitions.
Thanks for being with us and hearing our friend Ben talk about his music and the stories behind them and the care for his soul. Next week, we'll be back here again with another guest to talk about more definitions of our soul and how to care for them and what that looks like for another human. So go check out Ben Grace at Ben Grace Music on all the, that's his handle on all the social medias.
And you can listen to his album on Spotify. Please do. Please listen to it and then pay for it. I will have to ask Ben when he gets back on how do people pay for it because Spotify is great and all. But
but we need to get him.
But actually supporting people who say yes to themselves and yes to the universe would be a good thing to continue doing. In fact, Bill Pitts even said, who do I give pay my copay to for tonight's therapy?
To Ben.
Which is great.
For his
yes.
music.
To Ben for his music.
Also, Karen said that your transition was very Mr. Rogers, which is exactly what popped into my head when you played that little, that was very Mr. Rogers.
The little chimey like the, music. Yeah, that's music. Awesome. You can buy it on iTunes. I didn't know. Oh, great. iTunes is still a thing. It's wonderful.
Good. Yes, that's how Ben will get money for his music.
So in addition to having guests on, which we're excited to do more often on the show, we also want to be able to listen or be able to respond to your questions. So if you happen to have any questions that you think people like Kate or I, we're not going to have answers, but we can respond to them. Then feel free to shoot us an email at info@kateandcolby.com.
It's basically what you want to talk about. You ready, Benjamin?
All right, we're going to go back. So I'm going to do a different scene that's not the side-by-side because we don't need to see us while Ben sings. So let's switch to, let's see if I can, I have to unlock that first. Boom. So there's Ben. Gonna unmute you. All right, buddy.
Thank all right. you, love.
Yes, we can hear you, and it's got reverb and
fantastic. Fastest transition ever.
And I'm gonna mute Kate and me so that people don't hear us singing along. All right. So it's all you, bud.
Should you try to tell yourself I'm gonna leave you, If the fear you carry is inclined to believe, when the ghosts of all the stories upend and deceive you, hold on. When the miles are much too hard and roads are too long, if my face in your mind is an unfinished song, and you're sure that the right is all headed for wrong, hold on. Hold on. Won't you write the fear a lullaby? Reminder it's okay to cry and find me in the folds of your desire. Tell the worries in your way to try again another day. Shut up and love me till they all expire. 'Cause I'm not done with you yet, and this weight around my neck is nothing but a make-believe goodbye. So write the fear a lullaby. Should the shadows in your memory undo you? If the edges of the truth blur and elude you? When the ghosts of all the stories upend and deceive you? Hold on. Hold on. Won't you write the fear a lullaby? Reminder it's okay to cry. Find me in the folds of your desire. Tell the worries in your way to try again another day. Shut up and love me till they all retire. 'Cause I'm not done with you yet, and this weight around my neck is nothing but a make-believe goodbye. So write the fear a lullaby. You tell her a story, I'll sing her a tune, as if words could heal the wound. I'll tell her a story, you sing her a tune, as if words could heal the wounds, as if words could heal the wounds. And we'll write the fear a lullaby. Reminder it's okay to cry. Find me in the folds of your desire. Tell the worries in your way to try again another day. Shut up and love me till they all get tired. 'Cause I'm not done with you yet, and this weight around my neck is nothing but a make-believe goodbye. So write the fear a lullaby.
Perfect. Now everybody go to sleep, because you just had a lullaby, so rest your weary
heads. You and
your
fears have been lullabied. Thanks for joining us, buddy.
Love you all.
Love you, and thanks for...
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being with us tonight at the Kate and Colby Show. We do this every Wednesday at 7 p.m. You can subscribe to our podcast, because we do take the audio from this and push it out into our podcast feed. So if you're listening to this on the podcast, hey, what up, Pod fam? Come and join us on Wednesday night at 7 p.m. when you get a chance. We know that it's late, especially if you're in a different time zone, but it is fun to be together in this format. And that's it. Anything else to say, love?
Nope. Love you all. Have a great week.
Goodbye.
Thanks, Ben.
If you enjoy the Kate and Colby Show, here are a few ways that you can support us. Subscribe to our podcast feed on whatever platform you use, and when you do, go ahead and leave us a review or rating. This will help others discover our show. Find and follow us on social media using the handle @KateandColby. And speaking of social media, we'd love it if you share our show with your friends. Everyone is looking for a great podcast recommendation, so help them and us out. Finally, if you visit us at kateandcolby.com, you can subscribe to our newsletter, learn more about us, the hosts, and discover great resources for coming more alive. The Kate and Colby Show is recorded in San Diego and produced by Holy Living Studios. Thank you for your love and support. We do this show for you, our pod fam. Until next time, be well.
Okay, guest booking and guest handling.
Bye-bye, Benjamin.